Last summer, I was in New York City working on my musical, The Giver, and as I like to do when I'm in town alone for business, I would often go straight from work to some great downtown restaurant for dinner and grab a seat at the bar. On one such occasion, I popped into Cosme Restaurant on 21st Street and made my way to an open seat next to a middle-aged blonde woman having a glass of wine. Before I had even pulled out the chair, she asked, "Where are you from?" I said, "California," and she goes, "So you're a liberal." This was before my ass hit the seat. I said, "Yep, I'm Jonah." And just like that, we were off to the races. We proceeded to have a lovely 2-hour dinner together. I mean, we ended up sharing an entree and a fancy bottle of wine. She was a 50-something Polish-Ukrainian hardcore Republican woman who works in finance. And I am none of those things. And yet, we had an engaging and wholly pleasant evening while disagreeing on just about everything. Which should be the rule, but as we know, in the polarized America of 2024, is sadly the exception. Upon reflecting on this sorry state of affairs and the great pleasure I have derived from engaging face-to-face, IRL, with unlike-minded people, I thought it might be helpful to identify some of the principles I adhere to that allow for positive dialogue with somebody whose ideas are in direct opposition to my own. And so, I'd like to introduce to you my system for productive conversations that I'm calling the 4 C's. C number 1 stands for curiosity. This one is probably the most important. If you want any hope of success, you must enter conversations with a sense of genuine curiosity. You have to want to hear and understand other people's ideas and ways of thinking. Be open to legitimately considering them and responding to them thoughtfully. And here's the kicker, without any agenda. I promise you, if you enter a conversation with the sole intent to change someone's mind, you're not going to have a productive conversation. Nobody wants their minds changed for them. Though they may be open to changing it themselves based on the ideas you present, if you do so in an amiable way, again, sans agenda. What your conversation partner really wants is to be heard, to feel that you are sincerely interested in what they have to say. Even if you don't budge an inch in your beliefs, if they feel you've truly considered what they have to say, it's going to be enough. Now, if this level of curiosity is unnatural for you, fake it till you make it. I guarantee that at minimum, approaching your conversations in this way will set the table for meaningful engagement. And to me, that should be the only aim of friendly discourse. C number 2 is calm. You must enter the discussion from a dispassionate place of low stakes. If you're too worked up, it's already over. The fate of the free world does not rest on you making or defending your point. I'm not suggesting you can't be assertive or care about the things you're talking about. You just can't be aggressive about it or angry when the person with whom you know you disagree disagrees with you. If the conversation gets heated or tense, it's not going to lead to free-flowing or satisfying engagement. Just ain't. C number 3, camaraderie. Allow yourself to be tickled rather than prickled by the outrageous notions of your partner. Laugh. Smile, share an entree. Allow your emotional attachment to the subject matter to loosen just for a little while. The open, dispassionate sharing of ideas should be a fun exercise in human connection, intellectually stimulating and invigorating, built on a foundation of mutual respect. Remember, you're not trying to change anyone's mind, and if it's going well, no one's trying to change yours. You're just two people talking, so be pals about it. After all, you're here to make a friend, not an adversary. And last, but certainly not least, C number 4, compassion. You must be operating from a baseline assumption of shared humanity and good faith, that whatever ideas someone may have, it is their own life experience that has led them to this point, not some nefarious plot or mental health breakdown. Be an understanding and attentive listener. Look for openings to relate and commiserate. Enjoy the discovery of common ground. We're all stuck on this rock together. This is the crew, so treat each other like it. Now, of course, there are boundaries to all this. Of course, there are people with whom a conversation of this nature may not be desirable or even possible. After all, it takes two to tango. But you really can do a lot of the groundwork on your own just by setting the tone, paving the way with positivity, warmth, and an open mind, all of which cost you nothing. At the end of the day, most of us want the same things: security, opportunity, prosperity, the chance for a better tomorrow for ourselves, our families, and our communities, right? Lead from that. Now, please, if you find yourself trying out this system in your own life, let us hear about it. Shoot us an email or a DM or a comment. Tell us how it's going. I can confidently confirm that if you come correct to conversations, crazy connections can occur. Stick to the C's. And who knows, maybe one day soon, you and I too will find ourselves happily disagreeing over a bottle of wine and a massive plate of duck carnitas. This is the sixth episode of Being Jewish with me, Jonah Platt. I first met today's guest back in 2019 when we both sang at a pair of charity events. 5 years later, I'm hosting this show, and she's one of the stars of the most talked about comedy in the country. And no, I'm not referring to her star turn as an extra on Ghost Rider.
Shut up.
She's a talented actress, singer, a former Lokanda lion, which we'll explain later. She loves pupusas, and she's a proud Jew. Please welcome the beguiling Jackie Tone.
What an intro. Wow. You know,
we try here at Being Jewish with Jonah Platt.
Wow. I'm so excited to be Jewish with you.
I'm so happy to have you here and be Jewish with
I'm
you.
I'm so happy.
This is fantastic.
Be here.
Thanks for being here.
Oh my God, my pleasure. It's so beautiful.
We're going to dive right in.
We better.
What is your earliest memory of being Jewish? Like when I say little Jewish Jackie, like what pops into your head?
That's such an interesting question because I feel so Jewish in my guts. Well, I could say this here. In most interviews, I say guts, but here I can say kishkas.
There you go.
See, I'm just Jewish. And yeah. I don't remember a time that I wasn't. And what I mean is like, it was always in my life. I went to Jewish sleepaway camp.
Oh, nice.
And so we had like Friday night services and I had a bat mitzvah. So I was in Hebrew school from the time I was very little. And I guess the earliest memory, my mom spoke Yiddish in the house.
Like not full on Yiddish or
well,
peppered in some words?
Full on to her mother, sister, and brother.
Whoa.
So I picked up a bunch of it, but way more than peppered. Like way more than oive. Like
that's so interesting.
Mit ein tuchis mekenish tanzen in zwei chasenes.
What did you just say?
I just said with
I heard tuchis.
You heard tuchis? Yeah. Which is with one ass, you can't dance at two weddings.
Wow.
So when I was like a little kid actor and I was crying because I couldn't go to a school dance because I had a callback, she would say, you could pick. She wouldn't be like, you have to go to the callback. It was my idea to be a kid actor.
Mm-hmm. And where'd the Yiddish come from?
So my grandparents were Holocaust survivors and they were Polish.
On just your mom's side?
Yep.
Okay.
They escaped narrowly, of course, as everyone did. It's not like anyone freely escaped.
Right.
They were all over the place in Eastern Europe and going here, there, and everywhere. And in the ghettos and the shtetls, the Jews spoke Yiddish.
Right.
So when she came here, they spoke Yiddish.
Wow.
It wasn't a short story.
No, but this is what we're here to talk about.
Okay.
You know, we're digging in.
I get insecure that I'm like talking a lot.
You're perfect.
You're perfect.
So we're perfect together. Did you grow up in a particularly Jewish neighborhood, like community?
I mean, I'm from Long Island.
Right.
So it's like I'm from New York.
Where on Long Island?
Oceanside. Where are you guys?
My wife is from Comac.
Oh, I knew that. Yeah, yeah. Of course. Mm-hmm. And where are you guys from?
I'm from LA. I'm born and raised. I'm the first of my line, born in LA.
I knew that. Mm-hmm. I knew that. Slayer of Dragons.
That's right.
So I was on Long Island. So it was like, there were Jewish people pretty much all over the place. And then I moved to LA. So the only two places I've ever lived have had plenty of Jews.
Yeah. Did you celebrate the holidays like in your house growing up?
We did. We were high holiday service people when I was very little, mm-hmm. but then we sort of outgrew it. And I have two older brothers and they didn't really want to go. And I don't know that I did. And my parents really didn't push it on us, but we did Passover. We did Rosh Hashanah. For every year after my grandma passed, we lit the Yahrzeit candle for my grandma and grandpa. Like there was always, like, I don't know what Sukkot is. But like, I know that it is. And I know that there's like a Lou Love and an Etrog and the lovely gentleman will come and talk to me on the street. And I'm always happy to shake and do the thing with them. And it feels good.
Yeah.
But I don't really know what it's for, what I'm doing.
Do you know that it's this weekend?
No.
So Sukkot starts this weekend. Okay. You're like perfectly on theme. Holy. I have a Sukkot question in here for later.
I can't wait. I used to go in a sukkah. My mom's friend, Lenore Stam, used to deliver a shalach munis basket every year.
Lenore, what a gem.
Of course, Lenore. And I would freak over the shalach munis because there would be like really good, weird Israeli candy in there and good snacks. Okay.
Amazing. So just, you know, brief little explainer. Sukkot is a harvest festival. That's why there's all these like vegetation and fruits and vegetables and stuff. It's one of the three times during the year where people would pilgrimage to the temple. And the sukkah is like the hut that meant to be like the huts that the Jews made for makeshift shelters when they were wandering in the desert for 40 years before they got to Israel.
Oh,
so we relive
goodness.
It together every year.
Thank you, Lenore Stam, for the shalach munis.
There you go.
See?
You said in an interview that your bat mitzvah theme was Hollywood, which has obviously been a lifelong dream of yours.
Of course.
Not so unlike your fictional daughter Miriam's Big Apple.
Could you believe?
Bat mitzvah.
I know.
Like, were there any flashbacks while you were shooting that?
There were so many funny things and nobody wants this. Like, it makes me emotional, to be honest. Like, to be doing the Hora on a television show in 2024, it just was... It was nuts. It was so special. It was so close to home. I was channeling my mother every minute of every day. And not my mother's nothing like that. My mother's like, in fact, the opposite. She's like boundaryless almost to a fault. Like, do whatever you want. Someone else has a curfew. What, are you going to stay out alone? So that was my curfew when I was a kid. So she's the opposite. But just the joy and the bat mitzvah and the just everything reminded me of my childhood.
So special.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember any of your like Torah portion or off Torah from your bat mitzvah?
I don't remember my... It was like that kind of thing.
Sure, yeah. That rings a bell.
I don't, but that came out of nowhere. I mean, the second they turned it into a song, I got it in 2 seconds.
So you were already into singing big time at that point.
Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, yes. My dad accompanied me at every... diner, cruise, local pub talent show that there was up until I moved away.
So you've been doing this a long time. You started super young.
I have been paddling like the Dickens for 30 something years.
Wow.
It's nuts, truly.
When I think about it now,
it's crazy.
What a journey.
What a journey, dude. What a journey.
What a journey. Yeah. So music, big part of your life.
Music.
You released a couple albums and you were on American Idol.
The Idol story is just the briefest version of it is that I just tried out because it was my last possible year because I was so old.
How old are you when you
28.
Tried
28. I was so old. It was the oldest you could be.
I watched your audition.
It was the oldest
tape
you could be. Oh, don't.
In preparation
oh, God.
For
I
this.
Wish. I, you know, like I want to Khloe Kardashian that and remove it from the internet. How she had, there was like photos she didn't like and she literally
she
is powerful
wiped.
Enough. Yeah. They were wiped. There was like 120,000, 118,000 people tried out that year. And they showed like two of the New York State auditions on TV. One was mine. Then I went to Hollywood Week and they showed my auditions in every round. I was like, this is bonkers. I got eliminated with a couple other people at the, like right before the commercial break. And then the producers like escorted you away. A shuttle took you to the hotel and then there was like departure paperwork slid under your door. You didn't get to say goodbye to anyone. You didn't get to talk to anyone. That was in March.
You'll be neither seen nor heard.
That's right.
And ushered away.
That is right.
That's brutal.
Wild. This
wow.
is a it's nice, it's a fair and it's a wonderful business that we've chosen. And
right.
there's almost little to no psychological warfare.
Not at all. It's easy. It's for everyone.
Come on, it's for everyone. That's what I like to say.
Yeah.
It's for everyone.
So you uniquely have played quite a few Jewish characters in your career, which is like kind of unusual. You know, young Fran on The Nanny, Melrose on Glow, Gilda Radner, and now, of course, Esther. We got a lot of Hollywood Jews who are afraid to even admit that they're Jewish. And here you are, you know.
Yeah, quite the opposite.
Rocking it. You know, what do you make of that? Making a career out of it.
My personality, voice, and face don't allow me to deny my Judaism.
I don't feel that way.
Oh, that's nice.
And looking at you and listening to you. It's not just
I don't know why I take that as a compliment. That's self-hate. That's like vaguely anti-Semitic of me to have taken it as a compliment. What? That you
contain multitudes.
Thank you. That's what I appreciate I mean. But I think if I'm being true to myself, I think very clearly the easiest thing to cast me in is some version of the Jewess sitting before you.
Right.
And I feel so proud to be Jewish. I feel proud to play Jews. I just think there's something funny. I did this the other day and someone was like, money. And I was like, careful.
Yeah, watch it.
But kind of that is what it looks like. But I just mean like, there's like a chewiness to the culture of who we are. And yeah, I think it helps in a lot of the parts that I play. There's an authenticity there.
Yeah. I've played a Jew 3 times, once in a movie, once in a play, once in a musical. And I love it. I mean, it's so cool to get to be something that you are in the guise of another character.
Of course.
But yeah. Does playing a Jewish role do anything to your real life connection to being Jewish?
I've always been pretty connected, but again, like not mega practicing. But I think that just who I am. It's who my mother is. It's like we are Borscht Belt people. Mm. We just are like shticky, silly, loud. We just are who we are. And that happens, the adjectives used to describe us happen to also be a lot of the adjectives used to describe like what it's like to be Jewish.
Yeah.
So I don't know that playing Jews makes me more or less in touch. It's pretty much a straight line.
It's a great answer.
Mm-hmm.
Has anyone in your professional life ever done or said anything in regards to you being Jewish that's made you uncomfortable?
Oh, something happened once, but I used to tour the country doing like musical comedy. But at a school, I think weirdly enough, I was in Pensacola, Florida. This one girl, and she was just like, she just came up to me and was like, Amber said you were Jewish. That's not true, is it? And I didn't know how to answer because I was like, oh no, I'm here alone. But that's not true, is it? Was really weird. Like she'd never met a Jew. And also when I was on American Idol, many of my fellow competitors
had never met a Jew. Yeah, I think, I mean, like that's more common than people think, but people don't realize.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think
how common that is.
Mm-hmm. There's just not a lot of us. Our numbers are low.
We small,
and given our tiny size, you know, we're going to try and stick together. Obviously, we're not going to go to really Alabama where you are the only one there, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Like a lot of cultures, you find your little pockets and you...
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're gonna get into the show full on.
I can't wait.
If I may, I would like to take a few minutes to weigh in on the show myself.
I think this feels right.
Yeah. If anyone has been following my advocacy since before this show or before October 7th, talking about Jewish representation on screen and the desire to see more contemporary Jewish narratives has been a mission of mine. I mean, I've spoken about it in keynotes. I wrote for Variety about it. I talk about it a lot online. And I'm also someone who obviously has been a TV writer, an actor, producer. So I do feel I have some amount of expertise on this area. And I feel uniquely qualified to weigh in on this show, which has been so beloved, but also has had some negative reactions. Mm. So for me, I fucking loved it. I think the show is gold. It's like,
I love it too.
It's everything that I have been looking for. There's never been a show like it. It humanizes Jews. It wasn't schlocky at all. There's no oi is like the butt of the joke. Mm-mm. You know, the Jews are never the butt of the joke. Mm-mm. It wasn't tropey. It's amazing that it's like they're talking about Beit Deans and Havdalah and Camp Chaverim. It's like incredible.
It's incredible.
It really was awesome. And, you know, I always want to see stories that are just contemporary people being people, and those people are Jewish. And like, that's what this show
is. That's perfectly put. Contemporary people being people, but in this instance, they're Jewish. So this is a little slice of life of what that looks like.
Exactly. Yeah. And like this just totally checked that box for me. And so like one of my favorite moments is in episode 2 when they're in the car and Kristen Bell's like, you don't look Jewish. And he's like, well, what should being Jewish look like? Should my nose be bigger? Should my hair be curlier? Like, those are the conversations we have.
The best.
And the fact that he not only is able to voice that, but also he's making light of it in a way that, like they have that conversation.
But making light of it like Jews do.
Exactly.
This is what we do.
The fact that, like, that's being introduced on TV to millions of people is like just such a win in my book. It was so amazing.
You're making me emotional. It's really nice.
I'm glad. And like, and so I enjoyed it as a Jew for sure, but I also just loved it as an audience member. It was funny. It was so charming. Like the romance, it made me want to fall in love with my wife all over again. Mm-hmm. I binged the whole show on Yom Kippur, actually, in between like morning and evening. And you know, my wife converted.
I didn't know that.
So I have like an even extra special connection.
I did not know that.
I very much like Noah, Rabbi Noah, like needed to sort of meet somebody outside the usual circle who had the same kind of soul, but had a different vibe.
Wow.
Okay, so now that I've gushed, I want to respond to two of the main criticisms that I've heard about the show. And if I miss anything at the end, you tell me and we'll respond to that.
Right.
So the two big ones that I've heard are like critiques of some of the verisimilitude of like the Jews, and the other is the portrayal of the Jewish women.
Yeah.
So to address the first one,
sure.
You know, people are like, oh, the rabbi doesn't wear a kippah outside all the time. Or like, why doesn't Kristen Bell know the word shalom? Or why is he wearing a tallit at a bat mitzvah party? And so my first response to that is, who cares? Why do we care about that?
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. It's like, have you ever watched a TV show, like a medical show with a doctor friend or a legal show with a lawyer? They're like, that's not how we do it. I'm like, who gives a shit? It's a television show. It's not a documentary.
I have nothing to add. Truly. I mean, it's really exactly how I feel.
Yeah.
It's like, and I mean, this sort of answers the second question, but it's like, it's a TV show.
Right. And what
I'll wait to give my answer for the second part.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
No.
But I'm like on a roll here.
I'm living.
I'm feeling it.
I'm living.
So, you know, it's a TV show. When I say it's a TV show, what I mean is like everything about the show is organic to the narrative.
Yeah.
Like nothing was like thrown on to be a joke or to be extra or like was wedged in. Any choice that was made came from the story. So like, why isn't the rabbi wearing a kippah? Because if he's wearing a kippah, the entire pilot falls apart. She can't mistake him for the person who's not the rabbi. There's no meet cute. There's no series.
Thank you.
And like, why does she have to say the word shalom? Because maybe somebody watching at home doesn't know what the word shalom means. And then we explain it to them. And like, why is he wearing a tallit at the bat mitzvah party? That one, I'm not so sure. Maybe they just wanted to like visually shortcut that he's doing that something rabbinic and official. That was my guess. Yeah,
I don't actually know the answer, but it didn't even.
Like, who cares?
And it didn't even, I was there and I didn't even clock it.
Of course.
I was like, yeah, he's a rabbi. He has tallit. Right. He's wearing a salus. It's fine.
That would be my guess of what it was. So the like bottom line is we don't care. It got like 99.9% of everything was spot on. And so let's like stop complaining about the
nitpicking.
That's mostly
how I feel. Well, because I think with the nitpicking, I think it's like, to your point, you are in this game as an actor, writer, producer. We are both, as have so many, been yearning for this sort of representation that
so
is
authentic.
Exactly as you put it, so authentic and not schmaltzy and not oy vey and all of that. And it just is so good. And so you're not going to get 100%. You're not going to get every single thing.
Oh, I have to throw out another connection. You didn't know it was shot at my synagogue.
Gorgeous so synagogue.
Like, right? That's why like I had my bar mitzvah on that bima, you know?
Ah.
Pretty cool. Okay, so then to respond to, you know, the portrayal of the Jewish women, which has been, there's been like many articles. I never want to invalidate anyone's feelings.
Totally.
If somebody felt, you know, offended,
that's exactly how I feel.
But here's how I would respond. I felt, as I said, everything flowed organically from the narrative. So like, of course his mother doesn't want to see him marry outside the tribe. That's very realistic. I know
also,
a lot of Jewish moms who would be that way.
Not only is that a Jewish mom thing, I'm trying to point to a culture where the mom doesn't want their kid to end up with someone from that culture.
Right. And
that's just universal.
100%.
And to your point, in this instance, with their Jews, but that's like, I can tell you, how many friends of mine have done a movie or an indie or this or that? And the storyline is that their mother isn't pleased. And there's not articles about it.
Of course.
It's sort of a given that your mother wants you to end up with someone who's from the culture you're from.
Right. And
so, I don't know.
Even more so, I thought they like bought themselves even more with it, like, because she was an immigrant. She had an accent. So like, that's very realistic that when your parent is from the old country, they're adhering stronger to the traditions, and the kids are more liberal and progressive than the parents are. So, you know, people saying that she was so, you know, negatively portrayed, it just, look, there had to be an obstacle. Every story has three things. It's got a hero, what they want, and an obstacle that stops them from getting it. If the family doesn't want to not
episode
have them
one,
be together.
Episode one, everybody's thrilled for them. What
right.
is the
then
show?
Then the show's over. It's over at the end
what
of the episode.
What is the show?
Exactly.
And so I think on top of, you know, my other answer, it is that. It's like, it's a TV show. There has to be conflict. There has to be an antagonist. It's me. And it's Tova.
Right.
But it's like, that's what the show is. Also, for my character, I'd like to say.
Please.
It's not just that Joanne's not Jewish. That's, I think, a much smaller piece.
That's not it at all for your character.
No, my best friend is his ex of 6 years.
Of course.
I'm like, who is this?
Right.
And why is she in bright red mohair in the shul?
Right.
Get her out of here.
Yeah. And to me, that was very clear.
Yeah.
That it was like a defensive loyalty friend thing. And same goes for like the Wags. Like
they were
your clique. And again, they sort of go out of their way to like the Shiksas talk about like that those are the cool mean girls, and it's like mm-hmm. it's aspirational and they want to be like them. It's not, they're not putting them down. It's not a negative
at all
portrayal.
And also, again, with narrative arc, if I'm chill in the beginning, where am I going?
Right.
What are we doing?
Right.
And so even at the end when I soften, and I mean, not to spoiler, but this is, I guess, how Netflix is. You binge.
Oh, yeah.
When I'm having that moment with Miriam at her bat mitzvah in the bathroom, it's like that moment, which is one of my favorites of the season, is hopefully poignant to you, to people at home. But that moment felt so poignant to me because of where my character came from. Of being so rigid and everything had to be a type of way. And now she's on the floor in the bathroom at her daughter's bat mitzvah being like, fuck it, let's cut the dress.
Yeah.
What have I been doing? I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
And
little Joanne rubbed off there a little bit. Just to like close this loop.
Please.
The character of Rebecca, like all they do is talk about how gorgeous and perfect and amazing she is. And they're complimenting her. They're obsessed with her. And at the end, she's like super classy when she talks to Joanne. So I don't get what the problem is there.
I mean, wild.
And again, like with your character, they go out of their way to show that she's a great mom, that she's a cool wife.
Multidimensional.
That she almost banged Adam Levine.
Right.
It's like, those are not,
mean,
it's not stereotypical
no.
at all. It was a very
Thank
unique
you.
Character. It was just a person.
Thank you. I completely agree.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say that I've heard, like, it's like, That the you know, Joanne and her sister are blonde and everybody else is brunette, which it's like, it's a visual shortcut. It keeps
God,
the juxtaposition alive.
So
it just does some storytelling.
Right.
And people are like, oh, and then they walk into the bat mitzvah and their hair is flowing. It's like, oh, here come the cool, hot shiksas to like break up this boring loser bar mitzvah. But again, like,
party was a rager before they got there.
And also, that's like ignoring the context of the story. They're not going there to like show up the bat mitzvah. They're going because the chick who's trying to blow up her relationship is there. And it's like, I'm going to go be confident and stop trying to please everybody and just go get my man.
Mm-hmm.
And like, how many movies, TV shows do you see where like the hero comes into the climax in the slow-mo walk?
Literally
all of them. Did I miss anything?
No, I loved that so much. And when anyone asks me in the future, I'm going to play them this clip of you responding.
So articles aside, anecdotally, what's the feedback that you've gotten from the show from Jewish people you know?
I'm so glad you asked that as the follow-up to the last question, because that should have been my answer to the last question. Mm. Which is that every single Jewish person I know, and that's a lot of Jewish, but 75% of all the Jews on the planet.
Right.
Obsessed.
Right.
I told you I went to Jewish sleepaway camp. I went to Hebrew school as a kid. Every Jewish person I grew up with is DMing or finding me online and just being like, dude, what? This is for everyone, but like so special to us specifically. And yeah, I just think it's felt really good to receive. And I think it feels really good for the people that are watching it.
Did you feel like there was enough authentic perspective in the writer's room?
This is actually fun. I don't know what if I'm outing anyone right now.
Ooh.
Multiple people have like either texted or DM'd or told me in person. My rabbi was the consultant on the show, but like—
He's a very well-known rabbi.
But apparently there were many,
which
is why— when
Only
people,
one has been like— Publicly popularized
as
the rabbi.
Okay, because then I said to someone like, oh, this guy, and they were like, no. And I'm like, are other rabbis is such the a cute Jewish?
The one that I have read about and have been told that and saw him speak about was Steve Leader, who was the emeritus of Wilshire Boulevard.
Yes, but then there was another one, and I said Steve Leader, and they were like, no. And I was like, oh, I just think it's cute that like
they got their own Beit Din.
But just that there are like rabbis in LA being like, I was the consultant on that. It's just like really
everybody
cute.
Trying to take credit.
It's really cute. And I'm sure they did something or spoke to a friend who was in the writer's room.
Right.
All of this to say, Erin has the unique perspective of, I mean, she probably knows more about Judaism than I do just because she's a convert.
She had to take a course
on it. And she had to
it.
Like learn about it. And so like, I obviously know all the things I know. And so we have very different Jewish experiences.
Right. Did you ever get a script and you were like, do I need to say something about this?
Oh, that's a good question. I actually called my mom because our costumer, unreal, the Scal Nagar.
Everybody looked amazing.
The costume, the wardrobe was sickening.
Yeah.
She had me in like this black gown for the bat mitzvah, and I had to call my mom and be like, because we wear obviously black for Shiva. And I was like, can we wear black at bat mitzvahs? And she was like, I think Orthodox don't. But then is that wrong? I don't know.
I have no idea.
So, but then we weren't able to get a conclusive answer. And she was like, they're Reformed Jews. They can kind of do whatever they want. And so I wore the black. But there was another time where we were filming toward, is it called a yurtzeit wall when you're in temp, when you're in
with
shul,
all the
and
names.
It's the names of the people who've passed. We were filming toward it one day, and I like sort of raised my hand that I didn't know if that was like in good, in good taste, where I was like, oh, I think, and then Tova was like, oh, you're right. We should, and then we just moved the shot over a little. So it wasn't just like Tova doing shtick with like a list of people who passed behind her.
Right. I can picture exactly where that is.
And I know you can.
So you mentioned Erin, the show's creator, who this was sort of loosely based on her own experience.
Yep.
Did she like set any kind of sort of purpose or urgency to the show like based on that? Or was it just like, let's make a great show?
Let's make a great show. I mean, I don't know what her intention or what she was going into it, but I think I've heard her on a lot of pods just talk about like, yeah, I just wanted to talk about the best decision I ever made, which was like marrying a Jewish boy and becoming Jewish. She's just like, I'm so proud of it.
Aww.
And she's so smart and funny and straightforward. And she's so no bullshit with like a smile. She's just like, oh yeah, I wanted to make this. So I wrote it.
As I mentioned, you know, my wife converted, which was like the greatest gift she could have ever given me and the Jewish people at large.
Truly.
Weekly shout out to Courtney. Although unlike Noah, I actually brought up conversion on our first date.
Stop.
At the very first date. We had a unique start where like I told her I loved her on our first date. It's like we were boyfriend and girlfriend before we even went on a date. It's a whole thing. It was just like, you know, beshert. But she really loved that I brought it up on the first date. And her response was, so I asked her, I said, would you be open to the idea of converting? Because like, I'm serious about you. You're serious about me. If this goes all the way, would you at least be open to discussing it? Because if not, then like, I don't know what we're going to do here, but it's like, we got to figure it out. And she was like, I really appreciate you bringing that up now. If I see that it's important to you and not your parents or your family, then yes, I would be open to saying what would happen. How do you feel about, you know, interfaith relationships, intermarriage, having a Jewish partner?
It's an interesting one.
And this is a judgment-free zone.
Oh, just sure. To, you know, oh, sure. Reiterate. Yeah, tell that to the comments, but okay. my boyfriend's not Jewish. Neither of my brothers married a Jewish woman. But my parents are very culturally Jewish. And so I think it's interesting that none of us, and I've dated multiple Jews in the past and it just didn't work out, and having nothing to do with that. They just like, they weren't my person. Mm-hmm. And my boyfriend is my person.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels very Jewish to me. And his grandpa was, and his grandma converted to Judaism for his grandpa. And so his mom was raised completely Jewish.
Okay.
Then she converted to Catholicism for his dad, for Joe's dad.
That's so funny.
Mm-hmm. So there's Jewish in there. Like his energy is very like, for this I bent down. It's very, you know, and it's, how do I feel about it in general? I just think we love who we love. And that goes for everybody.
I feel like a lot of the people who like look at Jews wanting to marry other Jews, they think it's about Jews like thinking they're better than non-Jews, or that non-Jews aren't good enough, or something's wrong with them, whatever, which is obviously not true.
Sure.
I think you know, it really comes from like a Jewish fear of, as so many things are based in for Jewish people's fear, a fear of like the, if everybody intermarries and stops raising Jewish kids and the people will die out.
You know, it's crazy. It's, I mean, when we really crunch our numbers, it's staggering. And so I understand, you know, we're trying to repopulate a people and, you know, I'm not helping, but.
Well, just to that end, like I loved seeing a contemporary Jewish character care that his potential life partner should also be Jewish.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with the alternative.
Of course.
But like, I think it's okay to portray a Jew who cares about marrying a Jew.
And I think for us specifically, that there are so few of us, it makes it even more understandable. Like, well, of course you well, would.
It's a numbers game. Right. It's like there's way more non-Jews than Jews to meet out in the world. And I think it's important to note that intermarriage and abandonment of your Jewish identity are not like a guaranteed cause and effect that I think a lot of people believe. You can abandon your Jewish identity way before you marry somebody.
Truly.
And you can marry somebody and live super Jewishly and raise Jewish kids. So I don't think they're one and the same. And if anything, you know, I think, especially this time we're talking about, you know, it's a numbers game. We need to be welcoming more people in widening the tent and, you know, to me, the greatest tragedy would be pushing somebody out who is connected to Judaism or wants to feel more connected to Judaism because they love somebody who isn't Jewish and we're casting them out when they could be such a, you know, treasured member of the community if they would just be let in the door.
Right. So. I think, yeah, it's very interesting. And we're the one of the few religions we don't... is the word proselytize right?
Yes,
like
we do not.
Yeah, we're just like, we're good.
Which means we don't try to convert other people to the religion. We don't spread it around with missionaries or anything.
Yeah, we don't.
Or conquest.
Yeah.
There is a tangible fear right now in Hollywood that like anything related to being Jewish is going to somehow be like political or incendiary because of what's happening in the Middle East. I thought this show proves that notion completely false.
Completely.
Completely devoid of any politicizing or current event or anything. Mm-hmm. Did you see or feel that fear at any point in the making of the show?
Yeah. I just think when we were making the show, we were like, I hope people are open-minded and watch this show as a romantic comedy with a charismatic and fun and lovely group of people, some of whom are Jewish and playing Jewish. Like it's a sort of a trite answer, but that is really how we felt. Like, oh, we just hope everybody is open and enjoys this for what it is. Cause we were feeling like if people were open-minded to just watch it, they would like it.
Yeah. What was it like making a show about Jews while like outside the set, you know, anti-Jewish hate is exploding all over the country. Did you guys feel that? I mean, was that a thing?
We did, you know, did and didn't. It was like, yeah, I think they were sort of two separate things where it's just like, what's going on over there is an absolute nightmare wrapped in a disaster, wrapped in the worst thing ever. And then we were also trying to find the joy and the light and the whatever the word is, of just like being Jewish and making art and jokes and comedy in the face of that. Again, as Jews do.
Yeah.
I mean, my grandma would tell me about like the jokes people would tell each other in the shtetls during the Holocaust. And I'm like, you had time for a joke while running literally on your feet, running from country to country. Also, she used to put lipstick on.
What do you mean?
When she literally would like be in a ghetto, like hiding from Nazis. She's, and
yeah. It's like, I'm not going to look less than my best just because you want me to. Mm-hmm. I love that. Three-parter for you here. How has your connection to being Jewish changed, if at all, since October 7th, since making this show, and since like doing all this press representing this show?
Since October 7th, definitely wear my Jewish star, my chamsa more, and my chai more.
Same.
I feel a little bit like, I'm Jewish. I'm Jewish. I've been very lucky in my life not to have experienced, too much anti-Semitism. And I, A lot of like the online rhetoric is terrifying right now, even from like people I know and people that I thought were, you know,
yeah.
So that's a little bit scary. So that has changed a little, but I am still me and saying what I say and doing what I do. And then the show, I think the same, stayed even. Mm-hmm. So similar to an answer before, like
sure.
I am Esther, Esther is me. And then while doing press, I don't know. Again, like I said earlier, I'm such a straight line. I've always been like this. So it's nice to be able to just talk about it and be the person that I am. And similar to your answer earlier of like, oh, it's comfy in this. It's comfy for me here. This is who I am.
So by now, most folks have probably heard the news. You guys are coming back for season two.
Let's go, baby.
Mazel tov.
Thank
Amazing.
You. Are you an M-A-Z-A-L or an M-A-Z-E-L?
Great question. I'm an E.
Mazel
the
Tov. The Mazel Tov, I haven't heard. The first time I heard it was like a few years ago.
What? Mazel Tov?
Mazel Tov.
As opposed to Mazel Tov?
Yes. And the spelling is different. Like,
right.
I've been getting a lot of M-A-Z-A-Ls.
Huh.
Listen, you know, we talked about it.
Different
but
strokes,
anyway, yes,
different folks.
Sure, sure.
What do you want to see in season two? Let's start with like, for Esther. Like,
I would love to meet her family.
Mm.
Like, where does this woman come from?
Mm-hmm.
Is her mother like Susie Essman? And like, is her mother?
That's a fun cameo.
It's very, or like Fran, or who is her bet? Come on, all the dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's like some family situation that could happen there, but I don't really know. I mean, obviously, we're going to have to explore what goes on with Sasha and Morgan, her husband, and.
Right. That's sort of like maybe even the biggest.
That's the biggest
cliffhanger of it all. It's like something's brewing. And
what is going on over there?
Yeah.
And Esther is not happy about it. So I imagine season two is going to be starting, I don't know, but like what the F is going on over there.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that manifests. I also think, I just thought of this, but like Esther wants to do a podcast.
Great.
I can imagine it's
being
just
Jewish
like,
with Esther Rockloff.
That's right. Yes, full name, being Jewish with Esther Rockloff. I live.
There you go.
So maybe there's something there. I don't
okay,
know.
Okay. I like it.
Okay.
Is there anything like from your Jewish life that you're like, oh, we should do
Ooh.
This in season two? Like we didn't do a Seder. We didn't do a
blank.
Oh,
I love that. I love a Seder. Although we did do a makeshift Seder on Glow. We had a campfire episode, a camping episode where it was Passover. And Melrose was like, my mother would kill me if I didn't at least, you know, attempt to have a Seder. So she takes the hubcaps off her limousine and makes them into Seder plates.
Genius. That's resourceful.
I mean, that show.
It's a little unhygienic.
But, I mean, listen.
You got to work with what you got.
A little washcloth. So, I mean, that would be cool. Or like some version of a Shabbat.
They did the Shabbat candles in the restaurant.
At the restaurant.
And they had like
Oh, that's right.
Shabbat
they had their moment. But like.
Well, like the, a family dinner.
Yeah. And the way that like my family's always like you rip the challah and you throw it. And it's just like, it shows this like joyful, familial, again, like, you know, Jewish joy.
Yeah.
Not.
So you guys are challah rippers.
Oh, we're challah rippers.
Yeah, okay. When Skylar Astin was here, we talked about ripping versus slicing.
Oh, no, we're rippers.
Full
my
rippers.
Family growing up, we were. Slicers. And then I went to Israel and then they were rippers. And then when I came back, I was like, gang, we're rippers.
I love that. I mean, if they're doing it, we got to be doing it.
Authenticity, baby.
Yeah,
we're
I
rippers.
Love that. Another project on the horizon for you. Surprise, spoiler alert, you're playing a Jew.
None of your business.
Is in a movie called Floaters about Jewish sleepaway camp, which we've already established you attended.
I did.
So now we're bringing it back to the Lokanda Lion reference from my intro. We know you went there because my story producer also went there.
And saw it on the Lokanda Lion's Instagram and Facebook that they have blown up that I am an alumni.
I don't know,
yes,
but that's cool.
That's definitely how.
Is that a nice claim to fame? Like
it's
very
really
prideful
cute.
Moment
it's
for
really
you.
Really cute. But also to speak to that, when we were talking about like how Jewish people are receiving the show, like all these people from camp and everyone's just like over the moon. It's just, it's really nice.
That's
it
so
feels
cool.
Really good.
So he wanted me to ask you, do
Please.
The names Ira and Ray ring a
of
bell?
Of course.
Who are Ira and Ray?
Ira Steinfeld and Ray Diamond. Ray Diamond was the camp owner and Ira had like tall knee socks and he was the head of, I was going to say boys camp, but he may have been the head of, I think it was called under camp or the youth camp. Like we were the younger ones. Ira, when I was a kid, we would like, he led Friday night services, big Adon Olam fan. Asher Malach Baterem Kol, of course.
Excellent.
Thank you.
So many and tunes the, you can so sing it to, tunes. You know?
Ours, what was yours?
What tune? Like, literally, it was like you could pick any song almost ours was, and throw it
Adon
to
Olam,
it. Asher Malach
Baterem Kol, Yitzir
Nivral,
Yait Nesav, Vochef Zagol. And I went home at the commercial break on American Idol. What imagine?
I can't.
After that version of it, I should have done a Don Alam on Idol.
Yeah,
I
there you go.
I would have gotten eliminated much sooner.
Yeah,
thank you.
Can you finish the lyric? We came to camp as strangers yesterday.
We came to camp as strangers yesterday. Afraid to go away from everyone we love. So scared. Why do you know it?
I don't. I was just playing along. You like pointed to me. I was like, right, I'll
okay.
I'll
you're
do
like,
it.
I could read your mouth.
I do
so
improv.
Scared.
Let's
I think
go.
We're saying so scared. That's what we're saying. Yeah, of course I can finish the lyric is the answer to your question.
That was amazing.
Thank you.
What is that?
It's the greatest thing ever. This is going to get posted on the Lakonda Lions page.
Oh
and
my God, they're going to go crazy.
It's going to be bonkers, dude. That was the camp song, but it was the tune of like either Neil Diamond, oh, they'll kill me. Now I'm turning on them. I will always think of you. Is that Carole King?
I don't know, but we sang with Carole King at one of those charity concerts
we
mentioned in 2019,
yes,
which was pretty darn cool.
We were having like a singing at charity concerts moment
we
together.
We did, yep.
That was wild.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever done one since, and we did two in the span of like 3 weeks.
Right, I know.
Great.
Look at you now.
Listen,
look at you now. All right, so at some point I was talking about a movie called Floaters.
Oh, no.
I don't know when that happened.
No. Could have been any time.
What can you tell us about your character in that and making the movie and when it's coming out and all that stuff?
This was an indie, and so when it gets distribution, I will let you know and it'll come out.
Okay.
But until then, it's called The Floaters, and it's about my character, Nomi, who wanted to be a rock star. Her band quits. Her life's falling apart. She's 40. She's like crying. She calls her best friend who's at the sleepaway camp, who works now at the sleepaway camp they went to as kids. And she's like, Nomi, come to camp. She's like, come on, there's no chance I'm coming to camp. Cut to her boots exiting the Uber. And she sort of gets out of her own way and teaches the misfits at the camp about art and their value. And they're called the floaters because they didn't sign up for any activities. So there's like this group of like 10 ragtag, you know, kids, and they become like a unit and they put on a show.
That's so cool.
Really,
she reconnects
sweet.
With herself
exactly
in a new way.
And I she reconnects with herself, but I also think like as artists we are so eye on the prize. We're so focused on my goals, I have my goals, and this is like the first time in her life she's like, oh, not my goals, their goals. And that's
gotta be
becomes
refreshing.
My goals.
That's
like
cool.
I just want these kids to feel good and find their voice and perform.
I think I auditioned for Floaters.
This makes sense.
I definitely auditioned for Nobody Wants This.
For the brother?
For the brother.
Of course.
You know. Okay, so we talked about Sukkot. Did you know that?
Probably not.
Okay, so, but when this airs, we're going to be in the middle of Sukkot. Going into Shmini Atzeret.
Oh, Shmini Atzeret is one of my favorite terms, or I don't even know what it means.
I don't know. As far as I understand, it's basically the last day of Sukkot with like a couple of different ritualistic choices.
Oh, what
like there's some prayer you don't say, like you don't shake the lulav on that day.
Oh.
You pray for rain
sure.
or something, you know.
Shmini
very,
Atzeret.
Very tribal. Situation. And then the day after that is Simchat Torah. Do we know this one?
I know all of the terms.
You've heard them.
If
you're familiar.
Asked me out of context, if Shmini Atzeret and Simchat Torah have anything to do with Sukkot, I wouldn't have known.
Right.
But I know them. They're all in there. Also, just sidebar, I have something in my right eye.
Okay.
For the people watching at home, if you feel like I have a twitch, that's why. Thank you. Jonah, continue.
Well, they didn't think it before, but now they're just, everyone's gonna be staring at your right
fine,
eye.
Fine, because I've been feeling like I've been going like this, and it's like, at a certain point, you have to say something, because it's like.
We'll CGI a different eye
oh, cute.
In front of your eye.
Yes.
Do you ever see-
One green, one blue.
In Blade, in one of the Blade movies, like Wesley Snipes like wouldn't open his eyes or
Shut
something,
up.
So they like had to CGI eyes
I
on top of
Googling
his closed
this.
Eyes. Yeah, you'll see it, it's very
the
funny.
The speed with which I'm Googling this upon our finishing.
So Simchat Torah is, you celebrate finishing the year of reading through the whole Torah. It's like you've reached the end.
Oh.
to take a darker turn, like October 7th of last year fell on Simchat Torah. So this is now the first Simchat Torah since. Right. I think people are going to try to find the joy in it despite, you know, the
terror.
The terror. Mm. Mm-hmm. We always like to end with some questions from our Instagram audience.
Oh, can't wait.
If you want to leave questions for my guest any week, you just got to be at Being Jewish Podcast on Instagram. We always announce the guest and ask for your fun questions there. So we got a couple great ones for you.
Okay, ready?
A Jewish underscore girl asks, are we ever going to get more best leftovers ever? You were an awesome host.
Thank you, a Jewish underscore girl. No.
Is the short Netflix answer. Netflix cooking show, by the way.
Netflix cooking show, best leftovers ever, still streaming. The timing of that show was unfortunate.
It was 2020, right? It was like pandemic.
And if you think about the nature of leftovers during COVID, like you're really
just
gonna
like a little bit of a
gross. Yeah, like you're just taking something and it's just like maybe toss it.
Right.
But before that, it was recycling and eco-friendly. And look at this, Lee's leftovers that you had. You can use these different, add some ingredients and turn it into high-end cuisine. And it was, that show was such a joy to make. Oh my God.
I've always wanted to be just famous enough to get the opportunity to be like be a guest judge on some sort of cooking show.
Oh my God. My dream is I want to be a guest judge on RuPaul's Drag Race.
That's a little outside of my wheelhouse, but I love that for you.
It's deep. It's my whole wheelhouse. Mm. It's the whole house.
I don't know if it's Laya or Leah1. She wants to know, have you ever been to Israel, which you mentioned you have? And if so, what's your favorite place that you visited?
And I went with the Schusterman Foundation. Do you know that
organization? Did you go on like reality on a trip?
I went reality. Okay. It was life-changing. Absolutely life-changing.
That's amazing. Nice plug for Schusterman
there. Oh my goodness. I mean, they sent us to Israel. The least I could do is talk about them. I mean, it was really, really exceptional and life-changing. I remember... God, the food was amazing.
For sure.
The markets were amazing. It was so exceptional. It was jaw-dropping is what it was.
Yeah, it's a special place. Mm-hmm. We sort of touched on this, but we'll get a definitive answer from you. Olivia.ra13, do we think Morgan is going to come between Esther and Sasha?
I mean, yeah.
That's the prediction.
I think so. And I think
good TV.
It's good TV, and I think even if they don't end up having like a major affair, it's already come between Esther and
Sasha.
There's already
a thing now.
Well, yeah, because of the hiding and the lying.
Right.
And this is, I think, the big thing in relationships where it's like, I mean, I don't know how he would have told her. I don't see that it would have gone especially well.
Right.
But at least he wouldn't have been hiding.
Right. That's a tough spot.
Well,
I love seeing people like you succeed.
That's really nice. Thank you.
You know, so much of what we think Hollywood is the people who like get a hit movie when they're 18 years old and then they're off to the races. But like, this is the real Hollywood is somebody who just is grinding and grinding and grinding. And now you're on a hit show and it's just awesome.
It's just,
so I'm really happy for you.
Thank you.
I think the show should be called Everybody Fucking Wants This.
Everybody Fucking Wants This. Did you know that it was originally called Shiksa?
Yeah, I did know that.
I was like, of all the places for us not to discuss that, yes.
But I think it was a good choice not call it Shiksa.
I was, at first I was, I just heard Erin on her pod talk about the same thing. Like at first we were all bummed. We were like, oh, it's going to be impossible to beat Shiksa. But now that it's Nobody Wants This and everybody loves it, it just feels so right.
Jackie.
Jonah.
You are a delight. This has been such a pleasure.
This is so delightful.
I would have you on every week.
My bracelets, I'll tell you, are... She makes all different kinds, but they're by a woman on Instagram, Beads for Proceeds. And she...
Nice rhyme.
Yeah, she's rad. And she made these amazing bracelets.
Was this the inspiration for Rachel's choker-making character?
Could you imagine? Is that the funniest thing?
Who I was in an acting class with, by the way.
She's fabulous.
Rachel.
Yeah. Fabulous. I'm an investor in that company.
That's right.
Yeah, it's really fun. Anyway, thought I'd shout out my beautiful little bracelets.
Thank you again to my charming guest, Jackie Tone, for a really meaningful conversation. And of course, thanks to all of you for listening and sharing and engaging with the podcast. I'm truly grateful. Please, as I said, make sure you're following at Being Jewish Podcast on Instagram so you can catch all our guest announcements. And you can leave us fun questions like the ones we just answered. And at Being Jewish on TikTok so you never miss a clip. And for those of you who celebrate, I want to wish you a Chag Sukkot Sameach. Happy Sukkot and Shmini Atzeret and Simchat Torah, if those are your thing. And if you don't celebrate Sukkot, get yourself invited to dinner in a sukkah. It's basically just al fresco dining. It's a great time. You won't regret it. I will see you all right back here after the holidays for the next stupendous installment of Being Jewish with me, Jonah Platt.